Welcome to the Women in North American Aquaculture podcast, where we delve into the world of women taking on different roles in the aquaculture space. I am your host, Sheito Muritiwon, Associate Editor of Aquaculture North America. Today, we have an exciting discussion lined up for you. But first, a word from our sponsors. The Women in North American Aquaculture podcast is sponsored by Biomar. Biomar are proud sponsors of the dedicated and talented women in North American aquaculture. We are in this together. Today, I'm speaking with Julie Kuchipatov, founder, Seafood and Gender Equality, SAGE. Enjoy!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Women in North American Aquaculture podcast. I'm speaking with Julie Kuchipatov, who is the founder of Seafood and Gender Equality, SAGE. Hi, Julie.
Hi, welcome. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited. I feel like we had to push back our recording because of our schedules and things like that. But I'm excited that we are recording in this month of March because it's Women's Month. So why not?
Exactly. Yeah, we were super busy this month. And now we've had the time to stop our travels and sit back and relax and reflect on what we just went through for the past couple months.
Yeah, 100%. So Julie, could you please introduce yourself today?
Sure. So as you said, my name is Julie Kuchipatov, and I'm the founder of Seafood and Gender Equality, or SAGE for short. It's just like it sounds. SAGE is an effort to build and promote gender equality in the global seafood sector.
Before we started recording, Julie and I sort of bonded on something, which is our names are really not easy to pronounce.
That's true.
If I stuttered a bit, that's why. I just learned how to pronounce her name. So you guys have to pardon me.
You did excellent.
Thank you. So Julie, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. So it depends on how far you want me to go back, but I can go back a little bit. So I started this kind of career in the seafood sector very circuitously. And I've learned that many people don't actually start out thinking they're going to work in seafood or in aquaculture or fishing. So a lot of people do, but seafood in general is a pretty interesting career choice for a lot of people. And they don't really think that they're going to end up in this amazing industry, but we do. And so I was the same. I started out my career actually in college. I was really obsessed with Russian and the Russian language and literature. And I tried to do everything I could to get over to Russia. And eventually I landed a job working at a fly fishing lodge in the Russian Arctic. And we had a conservation program there. And so that is where I built the foundation of conservation and fisheries conservation in my life. And so I was there for 13 years. And it was a great experience. It was a fly fishing lodge. People would come and fish for Atlantic salmon, wild Atlantic salmon, which are truly an amazing fish. And, you know, you can read up more about them. But so I ended up, again, I was there 13 years, and then I came back to Portland, Oregon, which is where I'm from. And I found a position at an organization called Wild Salmon Center. And so I worked on wild salmon conservation, Pacific salmon, so in the Pacific Rim, but in Russia. And I was there at the Sustainable Fisheries Program. And so we worked on supporting Russian fisheries with their environmental improvement initiatives. Mostly it was revolving around achieving the Marine Stewardship Council certification, or MSC. And then later it became working towards becoming a part of or initiating what's called a FIP, or a fishery improvement project. So I was there for many years. And then the sustainable fisheries team at Wild Salmon Center transitioned to open an organization that was working on global fishery sustainability initiatives called Ocean Outcomes. And then I left Ocean Outcomes and I became the seafood director at Fairtrade USA. And when COVID hit us dramatically at the beginning, or in March of 2020, in April of 2020, I lost my job along with 22 other people in this cohort. and I decided to start Sage. And so Sage was launched in October of 2020, and we've been going strong ever since. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, my career path.
Nice. So I couldn't help but look at your LinkedIn, and I saw that you have degrees in communication and foreign languages. But how did that translate into seafood? How did you end up going into the seafood industry?
You know, I mentioned that I was working at that fly fishing lodge, and that was, I landed that job because, well, I had friends that were, that started that position or started that camp. It's a camp, we called it. And I kept kind of harassing them to hire me because of my Russian language. And I really wanted to get over there. And you can only really immerse yourself in a language if you're in country. So I tried as much as I could to get there. And like I said, you know, this place is really special. And these salmon are very special. There's not a lot of like really robust wild Atlantic salmon runs left in the world. And this happens to be a place where there are. And so we instituted a kind of a monitoring program along with McGill University, which is in Canada. And so I kind of like watched what, you know, what they were doing there and learned like, you know, this is a really special, conservation is a really special thing and we should be all striving towards it. And I kind of basically got my learning on the job around the conservation of these really special fish. And, you know, sustainable fisheries as a term was newish at the time when I got the job at Wild Salmon Center. And I didn't know much about it. I did know to speak Russian at that point and really well, especially the terminology around fish and fisheries. And I knew all that. And so it for me, it was a lot of on the job training, getting to that point. And then part of the theory was, you know, we're supporting these fisheries attain a sustainability certification that markets care about. And by markets, I mean really the North American market, because they were making commitments to MSC certified product. And so, you know, we started to bring seafood buyers from North America over to Russia to visit these fisheries. And that's really how kind of my, I guess, initiation into the seafood sector and the seafood industry, specifically in North America, really happened. And so gradually I just, you know, really loved it. And I loved, of course, I love eating seafood and all of these amazing places that you get to go visit. And I really wanted to expand that knowledge and in terms of geographically. So that's why I mentioned Ocean Outcomes. We started to work in fisheries other than in Russia, and that was really special. And then fair trade, of course, I got to visit Indonesia and all of these amazing tuna fisheries and just expand outside of salmon. And this is a really special industry and I really, really love it. And I did have a moment of, you know, crisis and panic where I was like, I think I need to try something else at some point. And I just kept getting sucked back. So I'm never leaving. I'm here always. And I'm going to keep trying to make this a better industry for as long as I can and as much as I can.
Mm, that's beautiful. So you mentioned that you love seafood. What's your best seafood?
Well, salmon. I love salmon. I think the diversity of things that you can do with salmon is amazing. So you can pickle it. That's one of my favorite ways to eat it, is pickled salmon. You can smoke it. You can eat it raw. You can, you know, cook it in a variety of different ways. I just love salmon. I really love Dungeness crab. So I mentioned I'm from Oregon. I love Dungeness crab. I can eat that probably every day. I don't, but I could. And I love scallops. I think scallops are just one of the most perfect food probably ever. I love sushi. I love it all. I mean, I think I don't even, there's one seafood I won't eat, which is octopus. I just won't eat that. it's a little bit of an ethical thing for me, but otherwise I'll eat everything. I think it's all good. And again, it's just a matter of like, just sushi. I mean, come on, there's nothing better than a little bite of sushi.
100%. Love sushi. Love sushi. And salmon is great as well. So definitely with you on that. All right. So, you know, COVID came and it disrupted a lot of things. But for you, it birthed something. It birthed Sage. Can you tell me a little bit about Sage?
Sure. So like I said, you know, like I mentioned, Sage is an organization to promote gender equality in the global seafood sector. And Our focus really is, I mentioned, sustainable fisheries and working with the market in my past work. And that's really translated into this new effort. So working with the market, working with the industry to make sure that we have gender equality and diversity of thought at the leadership level in the North American seafood industry and the sector where buying and selling and trade of seafood takes place before we dictate down our supply chains what they should be doing about gender. And the reason why I'm focusing on gender is because, well, there's a lot of reasons. I've been thinking about it for a long time, especially at my work when I was at Fair Trade. We were gearing up for a standard revision there. It's a certification, if you don't know, and it has a standard. And we were thinking about how can we amend it to support more women in these fisheries that were being certified and the fishers. So I kind of took that idea and, as you said, birthed SAGE during this time of COVID. So if we go back just a little bit more, there's these things called the Sustainable Development Goals. The United Nations created these SDGs, as they're called. And I think there's 17 of them. And the one that we, as in the kind of sustainable seafood movement or responsible seafood movement, have been striving towards achieving, these conservation organizations as well, is SDG 14, which is life below water. And there is SDG 5, which is gender equality, so in and of itself. And the UN itself says that if we don't achieve gender equality across all of these goals, then we will not succeed in achieving them. However, SDG 14, again, life below water, that does not contain any sub-goals related to gender equality. And so the onus is on us to integrate gender equality into these goals because, as the UN said, it's integral. It's critical to achieve gender equality before we can even achieve these goals. And then also, it's a fundamental human right. So gender equality is a human right. And so that is something right there. That's just the non-starter. We should have it because of that. But again, if we want to achieve these goals, we must achieve gender equality, and it must be pervasive throughout. Otherwise, we just, we're not going to succeed. And by the way, these goals are, I think they're very ambitious. They're very aspirational. And we're supposed to achieve all this by 2030. But I think we can all agree that, based on what we're hearing from the United Nations, is that we're not going to achieve these goals. And so the idea was, in my mind, was to spur the sustainable seafood efforts to include gender equality because, A, it's necessary. B, it's a fundamental human right. And we're trying to improve fisheries, improve farms globally. And we can do that by integrating gender into our efforts faster, and it'll be more durable and enduring change in the long run.
Was there a particular turning point for you? Was there anything that happened that made you say you need to create something like SAGE?
Yeah, the turning point was I lost my job. I mean, it was a time, as you remember, and many of us lost our jobs. And at that time, and there was huge disruptions in the supply chains in people's lives. I mean, people were dying, millions of people died because of COVID. And the turning point for me was I had children. I mean, I still have them. I have children. I was applying for jobs. It was just people were in hiring freezes. It was very difficult, time to kind of think about, okay, what am I going to do now? And I figured, I don't want to go back to work at a place that, I don't want to say doesn't appreciate my efforts, because that's not true, but I really wanted to be able to craft my own destiny and be the captain of my own ship. And so I really was scared, though, and I've said this before, I was really scared. But I think, in times of great distress, there's so much innovation and taking the bull by the horn, so to speak. I did, and I put out a call to the universe, as corny as it sounds. I said, hey, send me some signs that this sounds like a good idea. And I got back a lot of those signs, and I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And, if it doesn't work, that's okay. At least I gave it a shot, and it's working. So I'm really happy. And, honestly, I want to give a shout out also to all the people in the sector and in the industry who have supported SAGE and our ideas. some of our ideas, well, specifically my ideas, have been kind of wacky, but that's okay. People are so positive and so supportive, and they really recognize that this is an effort that they might not have known that it needed to happen, but now that they see it happening, they realize that this is, you know, this is a really good thing. And promoting gender equality in the sector is good for people of all genders, not just women. It's good for everyone. And so that's the goal, is to support people of all genders in this industry, make an impact and succeed.
Mentioning that not just women sort of makes me now shift my focus, because I initially thought that it was, you know, about women. So thank you for clarifying that. When you got your feedback from your universe that, you know, it's time to start Sage, what steps did you take to start it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, women are definitely a big focus of Sage. I don't want to discount that at all. But the work that we do has to benefit everyone. And so we really focus on who's the most vulnerable in our work. And if our solutions work for that most vulnerable person, then it'll work for everybody. So that's what I mean by when I say people, all people. So what were the steps that I took? So again, one of the signs from the universe was the announcement of a grant challenge called Equality Can't Wait. And so that was a challenge issued by Melinda Gates and Mackenzie Scott, who are two philanthropists that joined together to issue this challenge to support organizations that build women's power and influence in key U.S. sectors. And so I thought, oh, that's perfect. That's me. I'm eligible for that, because some challenges don't accept startups. And Sage at the time, I would still consider us a startup, but we didn't have anything, like nothing. It was just me and my ideas, you know, on my computer. So I said, oh, okay, I'm going to do this challenge. Oh, and by the way, the challenge was for $10 million. So three organizations would win $10 million each. So I thought, oh, $10 million. Okay, that sounds about right. So it was a big dream, of course. But the first thing I had to do to be eligible to submit a proposal for the challenge, I had to be either a 501c3 nonprofit. That's a type of status that a nonprofit has, 501c3, or a fiscally sponsored project of a nonprofit. And that's a mechanism that a lot of programs like Sage uses to get 501c3 status without becoming a 501c3. So I have a nonprofit fiscal sponsor called Coastal Quest. So I looked around for some sponsors, and I found Coastal Quest because I was an acquaintance with the executive director, and they were also just starting up this nonprofit after COVID started. And so it was actually perfect. So I found a fiscal sponsor, and that way I was eligible. And so I really used the framework of the proposal to build Sage. So I had to develop a theory of change. So like, what is it that Sage is going to be doing, right? And what's the theory? Like, if we do this, then this will happen. So you have to, there's a lot of things that go, there's like a 50-page document basically that was created to develop, you know, this, well, ultimately we developed it after the proposal, but a theory of change, like what's going to happen? What do we want to achieve? What are our strategies? What are our assumptions? You know, that kind of thing. You just have to chart it out. I had to create a budget for $10 million, which I thought would be difficult at first, but then I was like $12 million in, and I was like, wait, I need to scale back a little bit. So it's not as difficult as I initially thought. I had to create some sort of video, and, you know, there was a lot of stuff that we had to do to submit this proposal. And so I did all of it, and I submitted the proposal in September of 2020. And I thought at that point, you know, basically I built this, right? And I don't know why I wouldn't just launch it regardless of whether I get this $10 million or not. So, you know, I don't even remember when they announced the winners. It was like another 9 months or something, but I did make it to round two of three rounds of the Equality Can't Wait challenge, which was amazing in and of itself. And of course I didn't win, but I did win in the way that I used the framework of the proposal and the discipline to of the, you know, whole thing to build Sage. And so then I thought, you know, the only thing I need to do is really get a website and kind of announce this, because I had been doing this kind of in secrecy, not in secrecy, but, you know, no one knows about it unless I was, you know, talking to some trusted advisors about it. I submitted the proposal in September, and then I just set a date, October 13th. I think it was a Friday the 13th, which was funny. But I did it. I announced it, and I announced it on social media in a press release, and people just, it was just very well received. So I thought, okay, I'm doing the right thing. So I'm going to keep doing it.
That's beautiful. First of all, it sucks that you didn't get the money. I was looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Oh, we eventually got it. But
it would have been too much too soon. I am actually happy that we didn't get it, because it would have been too much at that point, I think.
Okay. But did you end up getting funding later on for it?
I did. And we have three philanthropic donors, funders who fund SAGE. That big part of my job is to find funding for SAGE. And we have philanthropic donors that fund us. We had, there's an organization called CPACT, which was critical to provide some foundational funding for one of our programs that we have called the Gender Equality Dialogues. We don't have at this moment any sponsors, but we did launch a sponsorship model. So that has incentives. So if companies want to support SAGE through a philanthropic tax deductible donation, you can find that on our website. There's a whole page about how to support us through our sponsorship. And there's different tiers that you can donate to us. And then you get certain things that you get for donations. So I would love for anyone listening to this to consider becoming a sponsor of SAGE. I know it's difficult sometimes because there's a lot of competing interests out there, but I think, you know, we're doing this on behalf of the industry and to make the industry a better place. And so I would love to see more companies recognize that we're working hard on your behalf.
So just going back to like what SAGE is about, do you think that women aren't getting into the seafood sector as much as they should?
That's a great question. And, you know, I have one of the things we do is we have a podcast just like you do. And it's called The Conch. You can find it on our website or on any streaming platform. But I talk to a lot of mostly women in the seafood industry at a variety of different roles. And just everyone's so different and so interesting and unique. And a lot of them have told me, several that have been, I call it, tenured in the industry, meaning that they've been around, you know, for decades, probably some of them. They say that, you know, back in the day, they used to be the only woman in the room, right? And so it's changed a lot. There's a lot of women working in the seafood industry right now. That's one of the goals of the Conch, is of the podcast, is to really, you know, let people know that this is a really exciting industry and a career choice that you can have, because a lot of people don't even think about it as a career choice. As I mentioned, I didn't think about this as a career choice until I was essentially kind of thrust into it. So one of the things is that there's 50% of people involved in global seafood production, according to the FAO, are women. So that we're already here. We're here in numbers, right? 50% of us. So you can't deny that. But the problem is that very few of us make it to these C-suite or executive leadership positions. So if you think about the global seafood industry, I think the last count was, this might be less, it might be more. We don't track those numbers as probably we should. We were relying on another organization to do that at the time. But there was, I think the last count was, there were 4 women CEOs out of 100 seafood companies. And if we go down the supply chain all the way down to origin, you know, there's not a lot of women involved in management discussions and decision-making around these precious resources, the fisheries or farm resources. So we really want to see more women and more diversity, honestly, in leadership, because we know for a fact that that leads to more innovation, that leads to more equity, it leads to a better bottom line, so it's more profitable. And who doesn't want that? I mean, you know, and essentially, we just want to see a more diverse workforce at all levels, including at the leadership level. And that will, again, there's less greenwashing when women are in charge, by the way. And that's, you know, that's a thing. Like right now, I don't remember exactly if it's a law or if it's coming into a law in the US where if you're making a sustainability claim, you have to actually be able to make that claim. You can't just say like you're doing the right thing or you're, you know, doing this or that. You actually have to prove it. And people are being taken to court for making claims that are not justifiable or, you know, around sustainability. So women greenwash less. There's research to that.
I think you may find this in other sectors as well. There may be women in these sectors. It's just that, they're not in positions of leadership. So
Exactly.
I find that problematic, and I'm happy that Sage is doing something about it. But I do have to ask, in what ways is Sage helping to ensure that women are getting to these positions of leadership?
So I'll break those down. I mentioned we have the podcast, The Conk, and then we also have a program called the Gender Equality Dialogues, which I also mentioned. And so this is really to engage the North American seafood industry and their executive leadership, which is almost all men, in dialogue around gender equality and what it means and what it can bring for you and your business, and just getting everyone to align on the issues. There's also research that there's a lack of perception in the industry leadership around the issues around inequality. And so these dialogues are meant to bring executive leadership in the room to align again on these issues, understand that there's issues, recognize these issues, and then create some solutions through commitments that are actionable and that they can actually do, again, actionable, and equip them with the tools and the knowledge that they need to actually fulfill these commitments that they're making. So, an example could be a company who's involved in the dialogues wants to conduct a salary audit, right? And to make sure that their salaries are equitable for people of all genders. And so that's a real commitment, right? And so how do they do that? And so we're there to walk them through this together and to help them kind of if that's something that they want to do, if they can do it, there's other things that they can do. And it really, it's just a way to engage the industry, and it's been really successful. So we've got our first pilot happening right now, and it's a year-long program that's virtual. They meet monthly. There's three companies involved in that. And so that should end in July. And so we would love, we're going to have another cohort recruiting for a new cohort. So if anyone's listening to this that's part of a seafood company that wants to learn more about the gender equality dialogues, please contact me. And the other thing that we're doing, it's a networking community for women and genderqueer people. And so it's called The Bloom. And this is another, we meet monthly, virtually. It's just a space where we can get together and learn from each other and invited experts around some of the challenges and celebrate the successes that we have. And it can be anyone that's found anywhere in this industry. I think we have like 150 members at this point. We can have oyster farmers to VPs of sales at seafood companies. We have a WhatsApp chat that we use in between our meetings that we, share jobs and ask each other questions and coordinate if we're going to be at the same conferences or meetings. It's just a lot of fun, and it's a way to really create this kind of community and camaraderie to support each other. And so those are two things that I think, that are important for us to advance our mission and our vision and support getting more diversity and equity into these leadership roles. But we're really trying to address systems that are built to exclude us. And so that's an important thing I wanted to mention, is that it's not enough to say, a lot of I mentioned commitments. Some companies have commitments that say 50% of our leadership will be women by a certain amount of time, right? We like that commitment, but you have to realize that there's so much more that has to be done in order to set those people up for success. Because it's not enough just to hire people. You have to really look at your systems and your culture and make sure that it's going to work for them. Because we don't want to just see people put into a job that they won't succeed at.
100%, absolutely. And the companies that have made these commitments, have they done anything to, achieve or fulfill them to date?
So the members of the Gender Equality Dialogues are still in their cohort. It's ending in July of 2024, but they're working on their commitments now. And so like I said, there's three companies, and so they're working to articulate their commitments and what they're going to be doing right now. So I can't tell you anything because I don't know what they're going to be committing to, but we will definitely make an announcement about that because we want to celebrate these companies. They're really doing hard work, and we're very excited about this. The idea, we would love to see like a community of these companies that have gone through the gender equality dialogues, and they can rely on each other and support each other through these efforts that will go on after they finish the gender equality dialogues, because that's what we want to see.
And I'm curious, why the conch for the podcast name?
Oh, yeah. When I was thinking about doing a podcast, you know, I mentioned the Equality Can't Wait Challenge, and I was thinking about doing some sort of e-magazine or a digital magazine showcasing women and others in fisheries and farms globally, right? And then I kind of refined my vision there. And then I thought, you know, a podcast is really cool. I love to talk. I don't know anything about podcasting, but I'm going to try. And I think, and then I was thinking, okay, what can we call it? And I was thinking, I wanted it to be something like iconic, a seafood, right? So what's, and then I thought, oh, conch, right? Because it's a shell, it's a horn. You can call people, you know, it's a call to action. It's also a delicious seafood that people all over, you know, the world eat and love. It's a really cool kind of icon, I think, for the podcast. And it has a lot of meanings and it means a lot to people. That's why I chose that.
I'm catching the subtle puns, icon, iconic,
It
conversation,
is
song, everything.
conk. There you go. Yeah. I didn't even put that together, but you're right. It's true. Iconic. Iconic.
Iconic. Lovely. I had him this year. I traveled to the Bahamas and I had conch. I'm like, oh, this is really good. I don't think I'd ever heard of it before. But
Yeah.
yeah, that's tasty.
It is tasty. It's delicious. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. All right. So Sage is only 3+ years. What would you say has been your biggest achievement so far?
The biggest achievement, well, there's a few, if I could name a few. So one was just successfully developing it. And of course, it's an iterative process. You're never like done with the evolution and the iteration of what you're doing. So I think just getting it announced and off the ground was a huge accomplishment. And one of the things that I think is probably the most important thing after just having, you know, building this, one of the goals that I set out for myself was to be able to have a team again, because in my previous position, I had a pretty big team. And they're really the joy. It was a joy for me to have people that I could learn from, also share knowledge with, and see them succeed and set them up for success. I love that. That was one of my favorite things. And so that was a real goal of mine, was to be able to be in a position where I could have a team. And so I do. Now I have a team of two, or it's a team of three, including me. So Cameron Moore and Becca Williams, and I couldn't be more thrilled with my team, and they're amazing. And so I think those are the two things that I would say. I mean, you know, we've done some great work on the podcast. We have more than 50 episodes out, and that's a lot. That's a great body of work. And, you know, launched the GED, launched the Bloom. Those are all amazing achievements, and I'm just really happy that we're kind of moving along and doing some good work.
And how long were you a one-woman team for?
So I think Cameron came on first in December of 2022. So basically about 2 years, I think I was just by myself. Yeah. But I mean, I don't want to say that I did everything, because when I did finally get some funding, I was able to hire some consultants to support me. So we have a consultant that supports us on our social media. I had a consultant that helped me with developing our theory of change. I mentioned that document already. And I have, you know, consultants that help me with the podcast. So I don't do, you know, everything by myself. I did a lot of stuff by myself, but I did have people I was able to bring on some consultants to support me.
A follow-up question to, your biggest achievement. Has Sage exceeded your expectations so far?
Yes. Oh, 100%. Absolutely. I mean, I had the vision. I kind of put it down on paper and was hoping that this would be a thing. But yes, I mean, it's exceeded my expectations in a million ways. And a really important way has, I think I mentioned a couple times already, has been the reception of Sage. Like, people are genuinely excited. I was in three conferences over the past month, and I had several events that Sage was hosting. Like networking events. And I had people come up to me with like almost tears in their eyes, you know, with tears of gratitude, saying, thank you so much for creating this space and doing the work. And it's just like, oh, wow. Okay. Thank you. It's overwhelming a little bit, because, you know, it's amazing that people are so receptive, but it's also so sad that there has to be this, right? Because in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to fight for these things, but we're here to do it.
Good. I'm happy to hear. I saw this quote that I don't know if to call it a quote, but I think it's really powerful. And I was hoping you could unpack it for me. Just gender equality and sustainability go hand in hand. Can you like talk more on that?
Yeah, that's part of our theory of change, I think, or our mission and vision. So, I mentioned the sustainable development goals, and ultimately, you can't have sustainability without gender equality. I think that's just, it's a fact, and I think it's well researched. And if you're ignoring a significant amount of people in the community or in the fishery, or in a farm, it's not sustainable. You have to come to terms that gender equality is a part of sustainability. And that's the message that we really want to get across because it's a fundamental human right. And if you make a claim that you're sustainable and you're ignoring gender equality, you're not sustainable. That's basically the bottom line. And so if you want to be truly sustainable, you do have to take into account everyone of every gender who's in your midst and in your fishery and in your farm and in your supply chain.
Think like that should be put on a shirt and something.
They really do. I mean, it's so obvious and clear to me. And it is a new concept for a lot of people because they haven't thought about it in that way, And I'll admit I was one, I didn't think about gender equality in a lot of the work that I did, but it's an evolution. And, we didn't think about social responsibility in those early days when we were focused only on environmental sustainability. And then, all of a sudden this bombshell research comes out that there are actually people in our supply chains operating in forced labor conditions. And so, we didn't think about that until we were told that. And so this is the same thing. I want to be able to say, hey, these social systems and biological systems are inherently intertwined. And so just like sustainability or environmental sustainability and gender equality, it's inherently intertwined. We cannot disassociate them. And so we have to address them in tandem, just like we need to address forced labor or nutrition. There's so much more to sustainability and social responsibility than just forced labor and environmental degradation. There's a lot, and even climate change. SAGE, we consider ourselves also a climate organization because by empowering women and girls is a climate solution. We're launching a new podcast series called In Hot Water. We go actually into key U.S. seafood producing regions and learn from people on the ground that are operating at the intersections of fisheries, aquaculture, conservation, seafood, and what are the challenges that they're experiencing all under the global climate crisis, the climate emergency. And so that's launching soon. So keep your eyes open for that. It's called In Hot Water, a Climate and Seafood Podcast. It's a series. It's amazing. But anyway, this is all to say this is inherently complex, but yes, gender equality and sustainability go hand in hand.
Other than In Hot Water, do you have any other projects that you're working on that we should be on the lookout for?
At this moment, we have one that we're kind of developing. We're just in the beginning stages of developing, and it's really about, I mentioned the gender equality dialogues, and we're getting everybody in the room together to support them in making changes internally. But we also, positive gender integrating or mainstreaming gender into their policies at internally inside these companies and corporations. But we're also developing a program that will support companies that aren't in the GED. So, for instance, if you recognize you have a problem and you want to have a gender audit. To understand where you sit kind of in the spectrum of addressing issues internally in your company, we're going to have a program that will be able to support you. We haven't launched that yet, but we're recruiting the consultants to support us and make kind of almost a menu of services that we can offer companies if they realize that they have an issue and they need to address it. So we really want to be a source of support for companies to come to when they recognize that they need to address some of these things. Because we all do. Even Sage, we work on ourselves as well. We're not just dictating to everybody else what to do. We are also doing a lot of work internally to make sure that we're embracing our values as well internally within the organization. Another thing I would mention, it's not a new thing, but it's ongoing. So I would encourage any listeners to check it out, is we have a thing called on our website called the Speakers Bureau for the seafood sector. And the Speakers Bureau is essentially a platform for if a company is organizing an event or a conference, and they want to find speakers that can bring a variety of different expertise, but they're not just men, right? So this is a platform for speakers who are looking for exciting speaking opportunities to put their profiles up. And so if, for instance, you like public speaking, you would like to be featured on this platform, you simply go on our website and you can put your profile up. And hopefully event organizers will also use this as a resource to find diverse candidates for panels to avoid what we call a mannel, which is an all-male panel. We definitely don't want to see those anymore. So it's a resource for all of us. It's free. We don't act as middlemen or take any fees for that. So I encourage everyone who is looking for speaking opportunities and likes to speak to put their profile up. Or if you're an event organizer, make sure and check it out and find someone who fits the needs of your panel.
And Julie, how can people reach you if they want to collaborate or anything like that?
There's info at seafoodandgenderequality.org. That actually goes directly to me, so you can reach out to me on that website. There's, if you just tap onto it, it's all over the website. I think you can email me. You can just find me on LinkedIn. You can find us on social media. You can DM us anywhere. Seafoodandgenderequality.org.
Any advice you'd like to give anyone looking to, maybe start something like Sage or any woman looking to get into the seafood sector?
If you're looking to start your own organization, I would definitely think there's a lot that you need to think about. So I would definitely find people, like me maybe, or others who have done something similar, because there's just a lot of things that what you don't know. And right. And I don't think I did a lot of Googling. The Google University is a thing. Also, I have on the podcast, there are several on the Conch podcast. I interviewed Imani Black from Minorities in Aquaculture, and that was a really good discussion because Imani and I started our organizations around the same time. And so that was a good discussion and conversation around what Imani did to start her organization. Kind of, I share what I did. So that's a really good resource. We took different paths. So again, Sage is a fiscally sponsored program. Imani actually started a 501c3, which is it takes a long time to do that, but she did it. And then also, I recommend in the podcast also, like any one of those episodes does. I generally ask the question of whoever I'm talking to, like, what advice would you give to someone who's thinking about entering into this exciting sector, who might be already in it or who is thinking about joining it. And a lot of the advice revolves around find yourself a mentor or find your community. And so again, we have a built-in community called The Bloom. Definitely you can sign up to be a member of The Bloom on our website. Find people that you can ask questions of, and find that group, or one or two people in the industry. Just ask someone, for a virtual coffee. The worst they can do is say no, but generally people are very friendly and open and ready to share their expertise, within reason.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Julie. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for gracing us with your presence at the Women in North American Aquaculture podcast. Thank you, and I hope that you continue doing what you're doing.
I hope so too. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and I look forward to listening to this podcast.
Thank you. All right. Take care and have a good rest of your day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Women in North American Aquaculture podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please visit our website, aquaculturenorthamerica.com/women, for more content. Once again, my name is Sheiton Muritiwon, and I want to say a big thank you to Bioma for sponsoring today's episode of the Women in North American Aquaculture podcast. Bioma are proud sponsors of the dedicated and talented women in North American aquaculture. We are in this together. See you next time.